broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show. And as you can tell, and we will not make any effort at disguising what's going on with my voice, all of a sudden, out of the blue, on an aircraft from Dallas to Los Angeles about a week ago, on a Sunday, what was it? It was a Friday night, racing to get back here so that I would be on the air at least for our Saturday night show. And I got a chest cold on the aircraft. And the reason why I say on the aircraft is because that's where I began to feel the symptoms. But it's most likely I got it somewhere in Toronto. And as I was saying during our pre-show, and for those of you who are just joining us, this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And we welcome you. We are going to have a show tonight. I hope it won't be too rough to listen to. We're going to have some very good and very special and very loyal guests with us. Art Griego will be on in just a moment to talk about air travel, as a matter of fact. We have Brad Rifkin to talk about a bookstore that he's promoting. And, of course, Casey Anthony, if you hadn't had enough last week, we're going to really pile on tonight with Harvey Wireman, who is an attorney at law, and he's going to be joining us as well. But to get back to what is happening with Phil here, and if this is the first time you've ever heard this show, I would like to say with all humility, I have a much better sounding voice than this. But here's the story. I was at a hotel. I was in Toronto visiting my cousins, who the whole family, Henry family, originally is from, except for myself and my kid's sister, who were born here in the United States. The rest of the family originates from eastern Toronto in a place called the Beaches. And I had met my cousins when I was a kid, so I went back and saw them again, and I had just a good time with them. I was very busy. I was doing some work while I was there, so the trip was not as relaxing as I would have liked it to be, but nonetheless, did have some time to spend with them. Now, in the hotel, it's a very nice hotel, by the way, the Sheraton Center in Toronto, and, you know, I'm a cheapskate, and by that I mean the Sheraton Center is a nice hotel, and the price is right. So for a cheap creep like me, that's a perfect place. Although I don't skimp on air travel. I got to travel first class because I'm a big fat guy, and I got to have a big fat seat to go along with my big fat seat. So I will spend money there. And I'm in Toronto, and I am downstairs, and I'm at one of those computer kiosks. It's not a kiosk. It's actually just a center or a lounge where you can sit and use the hotel computer. In my case, I will plug my iPhone in. It's a place to charge whatever electronic equipment you have or use theirs. And I'm online, and I'm looking at our website, and I'm checking into email, and there's three people sitting there, and they're not from the United States. Well, of course, they're not from the United States. I mean, Canada. But they're not from North America, or at least not any part of North America that is contiguous. One of them is a Chinese gentleman, and I know that because he was speaking Chinese, and two of them were Caribbean people, and I know that because I heard their Carib accents. But that wasn't really the thing that I noticed. The thing that I noticed was immediately they were coughing. And I only then did notice their nationalities when they were talking, and I began to put two and two together. I'm in Canada. Bird flu, Chinese guy, he's coughing, some people from the Caribbean, they're coughing. I don't mean to be, this is not a statement of American chauvinism when it comes to health. God knows we're not the healthiest people in the world. But, you know, on average, we're probably better than most. But the fact is, I had never entered my mind getting sick until these three guys were coughing. And then I got all this paranoid thinking going on about bird flu and this and that. Now, I haven't had a chest cold in 5 years. I know I had pneumonia. We'll get to that in a moment. But, I mean, just a regular old chest cold I haven't had in 5 years. Now, last two Christmases ago, I came down with pneumonia. I was in the hospital for a week. It was brutal. I got off of cigarettes. That, thank God for that, because I quit smoking cigarettes. And I also started to get healthy, and I also began to invest in, you know, the flu shot and stuff like that. So I thought I was pretty, you know, invincible. And I got on that plane in not Toronto. I took a connector from Toronto to Dallas, Dallas to L.A., because those were the only flights that had first-class seats left. I fly from Toronto down to Dallas on Canada Day, July 1st. Everything's good. Get off the plane, walking around, grab a coffee, blah, blah, blah. Get on the plane in Dallas on my way home to L.A., and guess what? Now I start to feel sick. And I can feel the throat, you know how that happens. And by the time I get off the plane in Los Angeles and I get in the car, I know I got something. And by the time I wake up Saturday morning, there's no way in hell I can do a radio show that night. So I'd raced all the way home to California I'm going to turn this fan off. Sorry if we're making too much noise there. I got all the way home only to realize I couldn't do the show. And that's the way it has been for the last week and a few days. And I have rested my voice, and I have taken the flu medications, and I have drank a lot of water, and you name it, man, I've done it. And here we are beginning week two with this bloody laryngitis. I used to get laryngitis, and for those of you who listen to the show for many years, you know that I used to get it at least twice a year. That was back when I was a smoker, and I haven't had it in a long time. To get it now is really a drag, because I pretty much thought that I'd beaten the odds with this. And to get it in the summer, I can't tell you, I don't think I've had a summer cold since I was a kid, since I was 14. The last time I can remember having a cold in the middle of what is turning out to be a pretty damn good summer here in California, especially where I live, because it's usually kind of cloudy here halfway through the month of July. So, all of that having been said, I wanted to bring you guys up to speed on this stuff. So, you're listening to me tonight and you're saying, Jesus, what the hell has happened to Hendry? You know, it's just one of those things. And the other thing to note, if you know this radio show, unlike any other show on the air, there is more of a demand on me in terms of my voice than any other show you can think of. And I don't care who it is you're thinking of, there's more of a demand on this radio show, and particularly there's more of a demand on my throat than any other show. So when I get something like this, brother, I'm telling you, it has a major impact on what it is we're able to do on this radio program. So I wanted you to know that, and now you know what you're dealing with here. Nonetheless, this too will pass, like the man said, and we're going to have one hell of a good summer, at least. I don't know about tonight, but I do want to let you know a couple of things. Number one, our website, philhendryshow.com. Right now, if you go over to philhendryshow.com and you have a backstage pass, you can get a backstage pass, and if you have a backstage pass, you can watch the streaming video. If you don't get one, and you can watch live streaming video of our show every night, and it's the only radio show, quite frankly, that's worth watching. So get a backstage pass, watch our video cast each and every night on Phil TV. You can also listen to our archives. You can also get the podcast if it is posted properly. And it looks like we're going to have to kick some ass on that one, because the hours on our podcast this past week, I'm told, were not posted properly. Nonetheless, that is an occupational hazard. But our podcast is a daily podcast, and you can hear the show every day via iTunes. And listen to the program with that direct download to your iPod or whatever device you want to hear it on. In addition to that, the archives that we have, as I said, they go back many, many years, and it's all there at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. So check that out. We also want to mention our affiliate spotlight tonight, KFMB in San Diego. Thank God for them. Great station. And KRYK in Chinook, Montana, a brand new affiliate. All right. Let's just see how we do tonight with this, okay? I think I feel fine. I just sound like I'm about to die. So please don't have any fear in that regard. Art Griego is going to join us here in just a moment, and we will talk with Art about air travel, and we will talk with him about the dangers of air travel, not the fear that a lot of people have, which is a very irrational or whatever that word is, fear that the plane's going to crash. I'm talking about a fear we probably all should have, and that is just how infectious the cabins of those things are. the aircraft. All right, so we'll be right back with that. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back. And I've just been told by my producer, he is, my producer feels for me. Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And we have Art Griego on the line. And Art, we're going to go as far as we can with you. I appreciate you being with us. But you can hear what's going on with me, huh?
Well, Phil, it sounds rough. And whatever they've decided they want to do with you, I think that that's probably
a good idea, huh?
I think so. But, you know, my feeling coming on your program here tonight, Phil, was I wanted to say this. As a matter of fact, I'm having a sympathy reaction to your cold right now.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Yeah, I almost feel as if I've got lung cancer.
All right.
Anyway, what I was going to say to you is I feel for you. In fact, I'm about to get on a plane right now. I'm flying to see my daughter in Chicago. And I was a commercial pilot for many years. I flew as a private pilot for many years. There's nothing that I enjoy more than flying. And I like flying as a passenger. I listened to what you said during your pre-show, and I was taken aback.
Well, you know, Art, if I could say this, I know that there are a great many men and women that work very hard in the airline business.
Right.
And this is not to impugn them, but you cannot deny that commercial aircraft, are not the most hygienic spots, okay?
Well, I'm not going to deny that there are that what you just said, but we, you know, we're not running a clinic, you know.
I know that.
All right, we're not running any kind of a clinic. What we're running is an airline, and we go from point A to point B, and we try to get people there as quickly as we can, as safely as we can, you know, without killing somebody. Now, you came on, and you said that aircraft were the filthiest, I think you used the word holes.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, look, Art.
No, you said they are the filthiest holes that you've ever been in.
I think that aircraft are very unclean and unhygienic places. Yeah.
All right. So, in other words, there. If I were to on a scale of 1 to 10, if you want.
I'm not here, Art, to impugn your industry.
No, hold on. Because I think you already have impugned our industry. So let's just a leper colony. Are they cleaner than that?
All right, if you want to be stupid, okay?
You said they were the filthiest holes you've ever been in. Are they cleaner and safer than a leper colony? Can I just ask you that?
I would feel safer on an airplane, yeah.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
No, you know, you're missing my point here. Yes, they're cleaner than a leper colony.
What about a tubercular ward?
All right, let me just finish this, okay? They're cleaner than a leper colony. They're cleaner than a tubercular ward. When I say that, I don't know if clean is the word we want to use. Safer may be the word. I'm sure that leper colonies are very clean because these are places, obviously, that are staffed by individuals who are medically trained and who are there to assist and to help the people. And the same thing with a tubercular ward. And I'm sure that one of their concerns and considerations is cleanliness. Okay, safer. The same thing. I grant you that an aircraft is safer than a tubercular ward or a leper colony. All right. I am simply saying that for the average passenger, it is an environment rife with the possibility of illness.
So tubercular ward, leper colony.
No, but I'm not making those comparisons. I'm not making those comparisons.
What about venereal disease? You say,
all right, that's stupid, man.
No, but again, when you said the filthiest holes.
I overstated. You're absolutely right. It's not as filthy as venereal disease or anything like that. But when I sat down on that aircraft, and I was going to fly home, and the air is blowing on me, and I like to have the air blower, but that shouldn't be a problem. I suspected that as I had that air blower, I opened it up a little bit, because the aircraft, when it sits on the runway, and when it is sitting there, and it is, waiting to taxi, and you've got a pilot doing a checklist, you have flight attendants trying to get people to sit down, you have passengers trying to get their bags and their personal effects up into the storage area so they can sit down. When all of that is going on, the aircraft can overheat. Not overheat, it gets warm.
No, it does get warm because many times the pilot will not have the air turned all the way down because he wants to conserve the electrical. You don't want to run out of gas.
What do you mean run out of gas?
You use too much air on the ground. That means that you're burning up. I mean, that's what I always thought. It's the same thing in a car.
You're telling me that if you use too much air conditioning in the aircraft on the ground...
That was my assumption. So I didn't give a damn, quite frankly, and I say this, Phil, I'm happy for the years I spent as a pilot, but I didn't give a damn if they cooked alive in the cabin. I had to keep the air off until we got airborne. So you understand something. As a pilot, I have one consideration, to live. And I want my passengers to live.
And to live.
Yes.
That's your first consideration.
No, Phil, to be honest with you, it's to make sure the air works and that we are able to get peanuts back there to the main cabin. Yes, of course.
No, but when you say to live, it sounds like, you're up against a task that you could very well fail at and everyone dies.
Well, now you got it. Bingo. Give the man a cigar. Now you know what it is to be a pilot on a commercial aircraft. Because I'm going to tell you something, Phil. I am a pilot and a good one. But I don't know any more than you do when the plane takes off whether I'm going to be alive at the end of that trip. So I want to make sure I've got gas. Let's not run out of gas. Because when the NTSB comes back with its report and they talk about the late pilot, Captain Griego, they'll be able to say he had plenty of gas, so it must have been something else.
And boy.
What?
Well, that's morbid. You know, that's just absolutely morbid to be talking about yourself that way and to be talking about the flying of an aircraft as if you are taking on the sticking your head in the mouth of a lion.
That's exactly what it is. You're sticking your head in the mouth of a lion. So I wanted to make sure that I had every edge, and I'm not going to have the air on blowing so that the electrical system is compromised, so the hydraulics are compromised, so that possibly we run down on fuel, so that any one of a million different things can go wrong. No. They could sit back there, and that means you, Phil. You can sit back there in first class. Okay, you hear me?
Yes. What is that about first class?
Well, you're all first class this. I mean, we make everyone sweat. And when I was the pilot of an aircraft, I made sure everyone cooked. And I mean sweat from the armpits. And I would ask the flight attendants, I'd say, are you seeing any staining? Yes. And I would say, good, because I want to make sure that it's heating up back there. That means there's no residual air.
So you want people to suffer so that you could make sure that you don't run down on fuel and therefore the plane doesn't crash.
Yes, among other things, because, again, my number one concern was to make sure, and I just, my hand to God on this, is to make sure that the plane took off, flew, and landed. I know how to take it off. I know how to fly it, and I know how to land it. But I can't do that if an engine blows up, or the wing falls off, or the tail falls off, or all of a sudden everything stops running, and the plane is just suspended in air. And, to be funny, we used to say, what if it just plummets to the ground like in a coyote? What is the coyote movie?
The Roadrunner and the Coyote.
Right. So that is my concern. And I'm sorry you got sick, Phil, but I would ask you this. Would you rather get off the plane alive with TB, or would you rather they find your body in a cornfield and say, well, he's dead, but by God, this guy's lungs, his kidney, everything perfect. And so what does that mean? That means you're on your way to a medical college in 68 different pieces. God.
All right, thank you.
Phil Hendry.
What a thing to want.
Every show, and we're very proud to have on the line here this evening Harry Shearer. I say on the line, Harry's in New Orleans, Louisiana this evening, and Harry is well known to all of you. He's an actor, an author, he's a director, he's a musician. More than anything else, the way I discovered Harry Shearer, he's a satirist, and he's funny as hell. His voice, of course, his characterizations are heard on The Simpsons, and Harry's going to tell us about The Simpsons and a lot of other projects, as well as on the big screen. Harry, the only movie that comes to mind is Godzilla, and I know that you've done other things, and so. But I see.
Well, it was the biggest movie I've ever. It's the biggest movie I ever did. Phil, I have to say, first of all, I feel so intimidated because I feel as if you're doing me. I don't feel like I'm actually a guest on your show. I feel like you're doing me, and I'm home.
That I'm tossing my voice. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because
you've been known to do that.
Yeah. Well, a human being, a person can exist, and yet when they're talking to me, they'll say, are you doing my voice too? Because it's just how I've gotten to know you. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Harry,
I feel like
you've
Margaret.
Also
got I feel like Margaret Gray. That's to be just.
Yeah. Well, then that in and of itself is a whole thought. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, Harry, you've got an album out, and a comedy album, and. I say a comedy album because when's the last time we don't often hear about comedy albums the way, but when you and I were growing up, here comes a new Lenny Bruce album, here comes a Bill Cosby album, here comes a Jonathan Winters album, you know?
Yeah.
And they were charting albums. You have one called Greed and Fear.
Yes, but it's not a spoken word comedy album, which distinguishes it from the stuff that we grew up with, because I found out to my displeasure that those sink like stones these days. But this is songs, comedy, humorous songs.
That's awesome.
about our economic nightmare.
That is awesome. And I know that your wife Judith, is Judith on the album at all?
She sings one song. It's all songs about people or the strange phrases that have cropped up in this little economic speed bump, I guess, we've been going through.
Just a small.
Small
a
hitch.
Small thing. Yeah. Yeah,
small
yeah.
hitch in our giddy up. And that's a Paul Harveyism. I'm sorry. A small hitch
it
in
is,
giddy up.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So she sings this song called Bonus Baby about her boyfriend who is a big trader or hedge fund guy and who's gotten a big bonus. And, they're asking for him to give it back. And he ain't gonna.
He's not gonna do it. He's not going to do it. All right. Hey, I do have, now that we've talked about Judith, I don't have her singing here. We have one called Goldman Sachs.
Oh, yes.
The
Mr. Goldman.
Yes. Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs? Or is it just Mr. Goldman Sachs? Yeah.
Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. It occurred to me at some point reading about all this stuff that they are the two luckiest guys in the world, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. They seem to end up, however crappy the situation turns out to be, they end up making money off it. They end up having somebody who's one of their representatives usually running the Treasury Department.
Listen to this. Yeah, here's a clip of the song. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we'll hear the guy. That's pretty interesting. So maybe this is Tim Geithner singing. This is actually from Harry's album, Greed and Fear, Goldman Sachs.
Sachs, everything's okay.
is an impression of Timothy Geithner there, isn't it? I thought I heard I thought I heard the nasal. There's a little bit of a nasal congestion or something there. That's great, man.
Actually,
and that's also
it's,
a. Yeah?
Sorry. It's actually done in the style. I don't know if you know the English band, the Pet Shop Boys.
Yes.
Yes. So it's sort of an homage to the Pet Shop Boys.
Now that you mention. That's outstanding, man, and I can hear it. I wish, like in the day, like I was saying, back in the day when KMET would roll all that credibility gap, you know, was the first place I ever heard you, man, was on, actually on KRLA. I don't want to start talking back in the day because people are going to be, like, lost. But, Harry, you were a part of, and this is the thing that's very heavy. Harry was a part of with the greatest newscast, the greatest hourly newscast that was ever put on radio. It was one, every hour. You and the rest of the credibility gap, Lou Irwin and I think David L. Lander others, produced every hour a running satirical review of the day's events, capped off by a song. And who was the guitar player, the singer?
Len Chandler.
Len Chandler would then write a song about the big story. Like, the only one that I remember is about the draft. And the lyric was, they can draft your ass and they can, something about how they can draft your ass and they can tax your ass and they can do this to your ass, but my ass is mine, I think was the name of the song. That's where, tell me about that experience, man, of like a local radio station. There's no syndication. There's no, this is Los Angeles. There's enough people, but you guys are like running your asses off every hour for 5 minutes doing a sketch comedy segment.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. It was a radio station that was constantly, it was a rock and roll radio station, was constantly finishing second to the dominant station in the city at that point, which was
Boss Radio.
And So they were desperate for something. And so we were the you know, that's always, I think you found this as well, Phil. The best place to work is always the place that is desperate and doesn't have a clue. Because once they think they figured it out. You're gone. You know?
You're gone.
No,
you're gone. Right?
You're so gone. So, you know, it was a place that was like flailing, and we came in, and Lou Irwin started this, and as soon as it got popular, and it did get popular, we were the focus of incredible resentment by the DJs because their attitude was, well, we're supposed to be the popular ones. You're the freaking news department. What business do you have getting phone calls and letters? Yeah, so it got kind of strange.
Oh, but that's what I remember fondly from that era of KRLA. I remember the disc jockeys, you know. And
you don't remember Johnny Dark? You don't remember Johnny Darren?
I don't remember those. I remember Casey Kasem coming out of the studio and saying hello. And in fact, this is how short I was, Harry. You know how short Casey is. I was looking up at him as if he was Godzilla. So
Lord.
3 inches tall?
Wow.
So Harry, you leave that experience, and off you go for the next several years. You wind up at Saturday Night Live. Now, you've got some things to say, my brother, here about Saturday Night Live, as well as The Simpsons, that I've got to hear about, man. I mean, Saturday Night Live is one of those seminal moments in television that you can never be recaptured. Everybody tries to run where lightning just struck, as you know the old saying. But and that's what they've been trying to do with Saturday Night Live, is trying to run to the spot where they struck lightning, you know.
Yeah.
When you were there, it wasn't a pleasant experience. Was it a less than favorable experience? Tell me.
you're sugarcoating it, Phil.
Yes.
You're making it sound less hellish than
like
it actually
fun.
Was. It was like a picnic in the park every day. No, it was. I'm gonna guess, because you've been in radio, you've had some bad bosses.
Oh, now you're sugarcoating it. obviously.
Okay,
yeah,
so I had the
yeah.
Yeah, so I just had the worst of the bunch. That's all.
Was he Lorne Michaels is Jewish. Did he make a comment about hiring Jews?
The very first thing he said to me when I went to work there, I met him in the he was producing a show for Gilda Radner, so we met at the audience of the Winter Garden Theater in New York in the afternoon, because my welcome aboard meeting. And basically the first thing out of his mouth was, you know, I've never hired a male Jew for the company before. I've always gone with that Chicago Catholic thing. And that was fair warning.
Well, what is that about? Is that just a Jewish guy kibitzing with another Jewish guy, or that was like a serious?
No, that was just a warning that he had a particular animus for people who hadn't hidden. Who hadn't worked as hard at hiding their Jewishness as he did.
as he had, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That's my guess. I mean, I literally, Phil, I spent the entire year, I figured I'm a smart guy, so every week I'd come in with like a different theory of how to solve this. It had a number of, we just mentioned there one little thing that just sort of set my neck hairs.
Well, I mean, pull the scab off of something, but I all of us, as fans of the show, all of us know that the show has gone through. You can be a very casual viewer of Saturday Night Live and see how it's changed over the years. And sometimes, sometimes it's been brilliantly, amazingly funny, and other times you scratch your head and you go, "I think what are they? How come they're not funny? Are they? Well, I don't know. I'm not in showbiz." And then you say to the guy, "Well, they're working too hard." "Oh, okay, thanks." So that's what we as viewers see there, and I'm sorry that you didn't have a very good experience there, Harry. So
well,
we'll move past that now.
I don't think. Let me just say, I don't think most people who work there have a good experience. Good years or bad years, there's one thing that's very consistent about the show. People, you can always see the eyes of the actors darting sideways and down because we're always reading cue cards on that show.
Was that your sense? Was that always the case? It seemed to me with I hate to sound like the old guy, but here I go back to the days of Bill Murray and Gilda mm-hmm. Radner, and I think of how improvisationally brilliant those people were. You would never imagine them needing a cue card to work.
Well, I'll tell you what the director of the show said to another actor when I was on stage with him doing camera blocking for that show. And he said, "Hey, you can do that, but I won't see you." Meaning he directed it by the script. So if you wanted to improvise, you could do that, but you wouldn't be on camera.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about The Simpsons and more on greed and fear. We're talking to Harry Shearer, guys. And Harry's with us from New Orleans this evening. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Show here with Harry Shearer, actor, author, director, musician, satirist. His latest is a comedy. It's a musical comedy album on CD called Greed and Fear, available digitally right now from Cougarette Records. Outstanding.
Courgette. Yes,
I'm reading it the way a guy from New Orleans would read it. Aren't you from New Orleans?
I live in New Orleans most of the year, but I'm from L.A.
You're from Los Angeles. You know that in New Orleans, Harry, everything is Carondelet and Chandelet
yes.
and Calmet.
Burgundy.
Burgundy, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's Courgette Records, okay. And, Harry, we were talking about Saturday Night Live and then The Simpsons, which you've been on for thousands of years.
Yes, since dinosaurs walked the earth.
But it was since Godzilla walked the earth. You
yes.
know, and,
oh,
and,
there you go.
Now, what... Tell me about that show, because, you know, I know Matt Groening. I've always found him to be a nice man, but you work for him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And people will say the following. Oh, well, you know, the Flintstones, man, when they changed Wilma's voice, it didn't matter. I still watch the show. When they changed Barney's voice, Mel Blanc, I think, stopped doing it. Some other guy. It doesn't matter the show. Did you guys come up against that with The Simpsons when you were sort of digging your heels in on the money?
Early on, I think year seven, the then head of Fox told the New Yorker, "We can get people off any high school campus in the country to do these voices." So that was always Fox's attitude. As it turns out, of course, they could get anybody from a high school campus across the country to run Fox. So he was half right.
That's truer than people listening know. Honest to God. Honest to God. So with that in hand, with that quote in hand, you guys went in there and said, we want more money, regardless of the thoughts of the higher-ups.
Yeah, it occurred to some of us that the show was sort of spinning off revenue at an astonishing rate, having been an internationally huge hit show. And mm-hmm. after about 7 years of getting low-grade, the network was just starting out. They got a special dispensation because we need another network around. Mm-hmm. So after about 7 years of that, we decided maybe now it's time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they were, they were making news. They're making history, knocking off CBS and ABC and NBC, and suddenly all this money. Yeah, like you said, suddenly there's all this money. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about money. First of all, do you have any? And secondly,
I got five on me.
A few thousand. Yeah, I'd love to have some. No, here's the thing, and it's always been my feeling, and you addressed this in your comedy album. While we talk about the government and while we talk about the labor unions, which, by the way, I just found out that I forget the name of the company. Oh, American Airlines. After they got the labor union to give back a certain amount of money, the next day they're giving out bonuses to their executives. Mm. So I've heard this bash on unions. And I've said on the show, I said, why are we reluctant to say that our business leaders, our industry leaders, the people that run our companies are inept and stupid? And I could use other words, you know. Yeah. Why is there always, you talk about a pass, why is there always this pass given to the private leadership, but the public, those guys are hung out to dry?
Phil, they're job creators. You know that.
They're the job creators in India. And
job destroyers in Detroit.
In Detroit. Although there's lot of nanny gigs that they're... Yeah, there's a lot of nanny jobs that they create, and there's a lot polish the bumper on the limousine, sir. Yeah. Those are the jobs.
That's why I loved the thing that was going on regarding Jay and Conan, because it sort of revealed to anybody who had a functioning brain... exactly how stupid the executives who run television are, and they're not different from the executives of many other companies. I mean, every single move in the whole Jay Conan thing was wrong, done the wrong way, ill-conceived, executed poorly, with no sense of either what was good for business or what was good for people. And I think that's a fair portrait that they drew of themselves.
Well, it is a fair portrait. And by way of maybe adding my explanation or my footnote to what you're saying, Conan O'Brien's the future. Conan O'Brien is good content. It's audience loyalty. It's looking down the road 5-10 years as to what is the best product to put in here, and they sacrifice that for a quarterly bump in earnings. That's essentially what you're saying. That's what you got.
Well,
with the
but. Yeah, but they screwed it up at the other end too, because Jay was the number one guy on the Tonight Show when they said, Jay, you're going to take a walk. They might have found another way to handle all that and keep Conan, but they just kicked the can down the road for 5 years and then went, oh my God, what are we going to do? Let's put Jay at 10 because then we can save some money. So it was all screwed up in every possible way.
Yeah, and this is continuing. I wonder if there's anybody, right now, Harry, and feel free to comment on this. Major radio corporations, my industry, are worth less than a dollar a share. I don't know where Sirius is right now. I don't know where ABC. I mean, these guys were worth less than a dollar a share. There comes a point where you stop blaming your disc jockeys or your the talent pool not being there. We got a talent pool problem. We got a talent pool problem with people that run these companies, right?
Yeah. I noticed it was a year ago that the company that owns what used to be the ABC radio stations and the ABC radio network was selling, the stock was selling a year ago, Phil, for a penny, single penny. That's
ABC.
Value. That's added value.
Yeah. Well, we got the price right where we want it. We can start buying the stations back, Bill. Yeah.
That's right.
Harry, it's great talking with you, man. I appreciate it
you
so
too.
Much. I wish you all the success. Where about? You know, I lived in New Orleans. I was on the West Bank, though, over with the, you know, the blue collar. Where are you in the in the city there on Caron? Are you down on the Esplanade, as they say?
I am in the French Quarter, sir. Yeah,
oh, that's
I love
thing.
The French Quarter. Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing.
I'm in the quiet part, away from the, you know what.
I know where the quiet part is. A little bit down, away from Bourbon Street, and it gets very residential.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful down there, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Harry, all the luck in the world to you. You're one of the greats.
Thank you, sir.
And
thank you.
Don't forget,
I'm a fan of yours.
Pick up Harry. Thank you, brother. Hey, pick up Harry's album, Greed and Fear, iTunes.com. Check it out. Harry Shearer, folks. See you, Harry. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back. Phil Henry.